Welcome to tonight's teleseminar, brought to you by theselfhelpschool.com. Our featured speaker, Wayne C. Allen, is a psychotherapist, author, corporate trainer, and self-described simple Zen guy. Wayne has dedicated his life to helping people lead fulfilling, meaningful lives by teaching them to turn their self-responsibility switch on. In all that he does, Wayne teaches wholeness, peacefulness, and clarity of thought. He's the founder of the Phoenix Center in Ontario, Canada, and author of several books, including This Endless Moment, A Guide to Living in the Present, and the soon-to-be-released Half Asleep in the Buddha Hall. And now, here's Beyond Beliefs with Wayne Allen and John Pollmar.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Session 2 of Beyond Beliefs. I'm your moderator, John Pollmar, from the Self-Help School. We have a lot of material to cover tonight, so I hope you have your action guide printed out and you're ready to go. Please join me in welcoming back Wayne C. Allen. Wayne, how are you?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I'm fantastic. We have a lot to do tonight, so why don't we just jump right in and get going?
Sure thing. Welcome to everybody. It's good to have you back online with us tonight. And as John says, I'm basically munging together two of the points that you would have gotten in that sort of the first mailing. And I kind of described a bit of this to you last 2 weeks ago when we talked last. If you remember, 2 weeks ago we were talking about core or rock beliefs. Those are the kind of the beliefs that come to us from when we were really, really young, and how those things tend to sort of operate on our lives. They kind of manipulate, in a sense, the way that we choose to view reality. So if you did the exercise that was in the end of that little handout, you might have discovered a few of your own. So I wanted to kind of segue off from that and to say, you know, that is the way it is. And so now we've got to figure out a way to work our way around this and find another approach. So I came up with that cute little acronym NAIL, and which stands for noticing and accepting and implementing letting go as the last one. There we go. I got it. So tonight we want to talk about noticing and accepting. So if you got the newest pack, then what you'll have seen right on the front page is a really great quote, and it's one of these odd little things because forever it's been attributed to the educator R.D. Lang, and yet when you look at any of his books, you can't find it. So who knows who actually wrote this, but it's pretty clever, and it goes, the range of what we think and do is limited by what we fail to notice, and because we fail to notice that we fail to notice, there is little we can do to change. Until we notice how failing to notice shapes our thoughts and deeds. And he actually wrote a book called Knots, K-N-O-T-S, which is kind of an interesting book that has a lot of these little word plays in them that help us to see how things kind of tie together and loop around. So what I want to briefly talk about, and then John and I, we can get into a bit of a dialogue about this, and we'll certainly invite you to, you know, ask questions as we can, and also if you want to email stuff in, you can do that too. What I'm aware of working with clients is that even when you kind of get a real clear intellectual idea about what I'm talking about, you know, and how you live your life and how you focus in and changing your language so that it's much more I language and self-responsible language, there tends to be this really weird disconnect that happens. So an example just happened a couple of weeks ago. I was working with a client, and what I discovered during body work was that she had some real, real tight spots in her body on her sternum or her chest bone and also between her shoulder blades. And afterwards, we were talking about what those might mean in body work theory. And I unpacked it to say it often is the case of people that are over-responsible, that are taking on the burdens of others. And the chest part tends to be sore for people that put themselves way down the list. I always describe it as kind of like the person that'll eat the burnt end of the pot roast. And so she really got what I was talking about. It perfectly fit for her. She says, you know, man, I'm not going to do that anymore. I've had it. And I thought, well, okay, so she really catches what we're talking about. Well, a couple minutes later, we were talking about what she might do when she got home because her body was already starting to hurt. So I suggested that she soak in a bath of Epsom salts, and maybe she could add some aromatherapy oils to the bath water. So she says, "Wait a minute, this is perfect. I have I know what my happy scent is," and she said it was bergamot. And I said, "Well, that's really cool. So dump some of that in." And she says, "You know, I got a bottle of that 6 or 7 years ago, and I know exactly where it is, right under the counter." And I said, "Oh, well, neat. How often have you used it?" And she said, "Never." And I said, "Wow, there's a perfect illustration of what we were just talking about." And she goes totally blank and stares at me and says, "I don't get it. What are you talking about?" So that's the not noticing piece, or the failing to notice piece. We tend to what it all boiled down to for her was, once I said, "You know, isn't it interesting? You know what you have. You even own that oil, and you never use it. So it's a perfect description of you not taking care of yourself." Then it starts to make sense to her again. So what we want to think about tonight, and there are ways that we can train ourselves to do this, is how do I tell myself stories about how life is and then miss what's really going on? And that tends to be normal human nature. We're surrounded by phenomena. We're surrounded by things that are happening. And we think that we're seeing what's going on. We think that we're looking through our eyes, we're seeing it. But what actually happens is that the data comes in and our minds jump in. And they have a certain framework, that's what we talked about last time, that takes that data and twists it around and shoves it to our consciousness in a prepackaged form. And so even when we know that that's the way the game goes, our ego is so stuck in trying to maintain this system and maintain our identity and especially maintain how we view the world that it really, really struggles to keep saying, you know, "Oh, it's exactly what you think it is." So I'll hear people say, for instance, "You know, I'm not yelling at my husband anymore. I'm not going to do it, except this time, because this time he really deserved it." And that would be an ego voice stepping in. So for what we want to talk about tonight is the whole idea that in order to step away from this, I have to get sort of very disciplined and very rigorous about listening to myself and the process that I'm going through as I look at the world. So, for example, when I bump into a situation where I normally would react by getting sad or getting angry or feeling put upon or whatever, that rather than just go in autopilot and go through all the drama and all the stuff that I always do, that I might give myself permission just for a moment or two to feel sorry for myself and then stop myself. And literally, one of the best ways to do that is just internally in my own mind to say stop. And then to say, okay, what do I really know that's going on here? And then what I ought to realize pretty quickly is, especially if other people are involved or situations are involved, I don't know anything. I know absolutely nothing about what's going on outside of myself. So most of what I'm doing is telling myself stories that fit my preconceived notions. So that's the first piece I want to talk about. That's really this whole noticing idea. And then I want to just segue over to the second one, so that I'll just do these two little bits of framework and then stop doing a monologue. The accepting piece is to move to the place where I own what it is that I'm doing. So a lot of times, again, what I see in clients is that they go to seminars, they go to therapy, they do a lot of work, and they get a really good intellectual command of the language. So they're quite capable of speaking in an intelligent way and being very self-responsible in their language. But as I begin to push them, what I end up pushing them on is, well, what are you actually doing? So in order to move forward, I have to accept the fact that my tendency is to do really silly things. And probably it'll be my tendency until I die. And if I won't accept that about myself, if I think, for example, well, you know, now I'm on this great spiritual path. I want to study Zen and I want to get to, you know, to excellence in Zen. So therefore, I'm going to be, you know, cool, calm, and collected all the time. And I'll be meditating 20 hours a day and nothing will fizz on me. Boy, are you in for a rude awakening. So our goal is to say that the acceptance piece is that I'm always, always, always going to have an initial reaction to the stuff I trigger myself over. And that's perfectly fine. The question is not whether I'm having that reaction. The answer is you are. The question is, what will I do next? So if I make a commitment to shift a behavior, then to be a person of integrity, my job is to shift the behavior, despite the fact that maybe in my head I'm still saying or thinking really weird thoughts. So we want to play around with those two concepts. And let me flip this back over to you, John. Is that clear enough to you as to kind of where I'm framing things from?
Yeah, I think it is. Actually, while you know you were talking, I've noticed that we're having a little trouble streaming on the web. So all these listeners that aren't listening to us on the web are on the phone line, so I apologize for that. I'm trying to dig into some of these technical issues to figure out why it's not streaming on the web. So I'm noticing my frustration with this experience, and I'm kind of sucking it up and trying to deal with it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good start for me tonight.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it's actually not a bad illustration because lots of times that's sort of the game that many of us choose to play. And so the idea becomes that, you know, I think people really want to control their outcomes, you know. And so what it boils down to is here's the way I think it ought to be going. And what's really ironic about it is that often what people will do is argue for their fantasized version of what life ought to be like. I ought to be able to do this, this, and this and be gone, you know, 28 out of 30 days and still have a great relationship. I ought to be able to da-da-da-da-da and get $1 million, whatever it is. And then reality is that this stuff isn't happening or the relationship's getting worse or technology isn't working. And so people tend to frustrate themselves for only one reason, and that's because the way they think a thing ought to be going doesn't match the reality. And what they do, and this is the place where, and that we just have to accept, but the silly thing is to think that reality should shift to the way we think it ought to be just because we don't like it. I always think, you know, what would life be like? You see, people are very selfish about this. They think, you know, here's what I want, and people, places, or things ought to give it to me. But if you say to, like, for example, if you're counseling a couple, and then you turn to the other spouse and say, well, what do you want? And they say something entirely different, and the first spouse can't understand why I don't get that their opinion shouldn't matter and it should be their way. And so that this is where the selfishness thing comes in. So at the end of the day, right now, I'm just basically I have nothing to worry about in terms of the technology end of this thing. You do, John, and as you're noticing, adding in a bit of frustration probably won't resolve it, and you just figured that out. So all you can do is do what you do and see how well it goes to getting this thing streaming on the web, because that's the reality we're dealing with right now.
Well, I think you might have taught me this one, is that when you're frustrated and then you get mad, now you have two problems. So, you know, I think I'm trying to avoid that. You know, I'll deal with the frustration, but I'm going to try not to get mad about it.
Sure.
Yeah, it's definitely not cooperating with me today. So we do have a recording of this that we'll have to email out to everybody. But there are people on the phone line. Welcome, everybody. I apologize if you're trying to stream and you now have had to dial a long-distance call. So sorry about that.
Technology.
Oh, boy.
So I think it's really important, you know, that we, as we state what's going on, you know, here, I guess what I'm trying to accomplish in coming up with this little NAIL acronym and doing these calls is to say that often, you know, in a real sense, to go back even to my client illustration, we're really hard on ourselves and are really frustrating ourselves over this disconnect between the life we imagine we ought to be having and the life we're having. And so part of what I'm trying to help you see in terms of today's conversation and the next couple is that I'm not saying that you have to accept life as it is forever. What I am saying is no matter where we are, that's where we are right now, and that's ground zero. So it does me no good to say right now isn't acceptable the way it is, because all I'm doing is delaying dealing with right now.
Yep. I'm with you on that one. So I'm dealing with it. And, you know, it's not working. So that's the way that's going to be right now.
There you go. Yeah. Well, technology, as I said. So, yeah. So I noticed certainly in terms of the questions that we've received over the past several weeks as we prepared for this, and then in the interim between these two sessions, that, you know, that there have been a lot of questions around happiness versus dark clouds and sadness and things hanging over people's heads. And I guess what I would do today is invite each of you to have a look at that. I'm looking at one. I just flipped my screen over here so I can actually read one. But it's just like, how do I change and release all my negativity to change my life in all areas? And, you know, so see, it's like there's this mix there, the mix between what's going on inside of me, which is my negativity, and then there's my life in all areas. And oddly enough, our lives in all areas tend to, in general, be neutral. And that's a really tough concept. Now, that's not to say that weird stuff doesn't happen. Of course it does, and sometimes we really bump our nose against something that's, like, extreme. But in general, most of us don't. And so what we're confronting is just the day-to-day beingness of life. And so all I can do is notice that as I confront things that don't match my preconceived notion of how they should be, I tend to then go to negativity. So as I notice that pattern, I can begin to explore other options.
Yeah, I'm sure people have experience with this on the phone line. If you have questions that you want to ask regarding noticing, you could raise your hand via pressing 5-star on your keypad. Wayne, do you think it's a good time to take a question about noticing right now?
Sure can.
Okay, so if you have a question about noticing, 5-star will raise your hand and I can unmute your line. Let's see what we got going on. I am definitely noticing that people are complaining that they can't hear this on the web.
Yeah. Well, I hope that we'll have this polished up by next time around. And in the meantime, I guess all we can do for the people on the web is, you know, and I just actually noticed my beloved Darbella has just walked back downstairs to our downstairs studio. She was upstairs on her laptop attempting to listen to the stream version of this. It's impossible for her to sit in the same room with me and do it because of the there's a kind of a time delay or time lag between my talking and her hearing. And it was driving her kind of a little wacky last week, so she went upstairs. So she's back. Let me, as we're waiting for a hand to go up, I notice another question here online, and this one is back to this idea, and I kind of touched on half of this person's question last time, but the second half is this idea of in respect to good or bad, it says, or the fact that it doesn't exist, that all is neutral, this is a challenge. And then questioning about if I don't use judgment for things, would there not be chaos? And I thought this is an interesting question. Even my next blog article, the one that comes out next week, is actually going to deal with this topic. But again, this is the same idea. There's this idea that if I am not totally compelling the world to behave itself, that all kinds of bad stuff is going to happen. And so what we end up doing is not only having to act in the world in a responsible way, but we end up thinking about what ought to be going on out in the world and judging that what's going on out in the world is bad or wrong or defective or whatever. And what we've done, much as you said a minute ago, is complicated the whole situation by adding an additional layer. So in other words, to go back to R.G. Lang's quote, we're failing to notice not what's outside. We're seeing that really clearly. What we're failing to notice is the games we're playing between our own ears.
Very true. How about when you're noticing, you know, the game that you're playing and the game's winning? You know what I mean by that?
You got an example?
Well, you know, you're noticing your frustration, you're noticing your stress, and you're not, it's not making it any better that you're noticing it, you're aware of it.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. Well, let's go back to, you know, point two, that whole idea of acceptance. This really does step through and will be, you know, by the time we're done 3 weeks from now and we've covered all four points, I think you'll see how this actually is a very nice pattern to go through. But once I notice that I'm frustrating myself, what we tend to do then, because the ego is in defensive mode, is to start to say, and I shouldn't feel this way. I'm all wise and all knowing, and I'm really, you know, the frustration is stupid, and I shouldn't be doing this. So then we get into a big battle with ourselves about how dumb we are for doing something we know we shouldn't be doing. So as you notice, we've now added another layer. And at the end of the day, we still haven't dealt with the actual event, which probably might not have even required frustration. But since we did, if we notice and accept that we're frustrating ourselves, then we actually can go into those other two steps, which we'll be discussing next week and the following week, which is investigation. I finally remember what the I was without my paperwork in front of me, and letting go. And so the idea gets to be that investigation is all about learning to adopt new behaviors for old patterns. And then letting go is simply what it sounds like, that once I recognize that I can do something different, then I don't want to spend a lot of time reviewing it or going, well, you know, gee, that was tough or whatever. I just want to be able to have my experiences and let go of them so that I don't miss the next experience.
Very good. Yeah, everybody on the line who's submitting questions that are trying to get the stream is just not going to work tonight. I've exhausted every option, and I'm letting go of that. So that's just the way it's going to be. I apologize. We do have some questions on the line, so let's go to them.
Okay.
Hi, caller. Can you hear us? Let's see if this is going to work tonight.
Hello?
Yes, hi. Sorry about that. Who are we talking with?
You're talking with Jeff. But
hi, Jeff.
You've already answered my other question, actually, which was, is this ever going to work tonight? So move on to the next – but just for you to know, when I did press star or five star,
yeah,
there was no beep back to me at all that this was working. I guess I just got stuck in a queue. So I'm surprised that you connected with me because I sent you a little email saying even that isn't working.
Yeah, Jeff, it actually was working. I'm just juggling a few different things, trying to get
them. Oh, you just – right. You just may want to explain to people that if you don't get to them right away, it doesn't mean that they're not in the queue. That's all.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you, Jeff. That's a great point.
Go to the next one.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Hello. Who are we talking with?
Hi, this is Jan.
Hi, Jan.
How are you?
Stressed.
Hi, Jan.
You know, you were talking about observing, and I had an incident where my husband asked me to do something that I was, like, totally against.
Mm-hmm.
I stood outside myself and realized that I couldn't do it because it made me very fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I acknowledged that, you know, fear was making me stop, I kind of like just turned around and said, you know, I can do that.
Very good.
It was so amazing to me because I was like such a noticing that my whole body just switched.
Yep. Yeah, and see, that's the interesting piece. I'm glad you're saying it in that kind of language, because the kind of work that we're talking about here, and it's kind of why I do psychotherapy and Zen and body work with people all at the same time, is that we're not divided. We're body, mind, spirit kind of individuals, and as we really get an insight as to how life works, we not only get it intellectually, but we get it, you know, viscerally. We get it in our bodies, and often it's just about the process that you've just described. That as I notice, my initial reaction is fearful and tightening up and immediately saying no, then I go, okay, interesting, there's that pattern that I do again. So what I'm going to do is stop and breathe and take a real moment here and then say, okay, now what is this while I'm scared? Okay, then I can say, all right, so what would happen if I chose to just be with my fear and let it be there in the background or sliding off to the side, in other words, accepting it, and then open myself to the possibility that I might have other choices available to me.
I think that's, you know, all of that happened, but I wasn't aware that I went through that process. I just know that when my belief system changed, I felt lighter and, like, totally relieved.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Nice feeling, isn't it?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, all that I would say, and this is the noticing piece for you, is as you meditate on how that process felt for you, and you could probably sort of, in a sense, you know, recapture the feeling of that release, that you just, you know, say really loudly and clearly to yourself that this wasn't a one-shot deal. This is reality all the time. And then, in a sense, we're training ourselves to have those kind of experiences when the next thing comes, because of course there's always going to be a next thing. That's the way the world is.
That makes sense. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Jan. We have a question on the internet. At least the question form is functioning well.
Cool.
Ray asks, I'm noticing I'm in one of my negative cycles, mad at the world for no apparent reason or every apparent reason. I don't seem to be able to shake it. Despite noticing, it eventually goes away. Thoughts. By the way, he is listening online, so Ray is able to listen online. So,
cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah, isn't it an odd night? Yes. Well, it must
Mercury
be lightning
in
here.
Retrograde. That's what I need to know. Is that happening right
yes,
now?
Yes. No. No doubt.
Yeah.
Well, let me tackle that. You know. I guess, again, and this was part of discovering how we do life. I was thinking about this, actually, just a little while ago. There was an article, and I wish I'd have looked it up, but it was probably 6 months ago in Shambhala Sun, and I know it was in that magazine, and I would guess it was an interview with Pema Chodron. And so somebody was saying, you know, how she smiles all the time and da-da-da-da-da-da, and so she said, you know, I'm actually a cheerful melancholiac. And I thought, oh, is that ever a cool line? You know, like, boy, does that ever fit me. You know, my personality to the nth degree is cheerful melancholia. And so I've been using that line now for 6 months or a year, cheerfully stealing it from her and giving her credit. And so part of the game is to notice what my reaction is. So I may reach a certain level, Ray, of frustration or whatever with whatever is going on and the stories I'm telling myself. So you're noticing that you're doing it. That's a really good thing. The next step, you know, is, and this is the tricky piece, is the acceptance piece. So it's okay for me to be a cheerful melancholiac, to be angry, to be sad, to be down, to be, I won't even say depressed because that has, you know, negative connotations in our culture, but, you know, off my feed. And once I say that it's to myself, you know, this is who I am, and this is okay. This is okay to be in this space. Then I can ask the really important next question, and what does my body need to do with this feeling? And often what it'll be is with anger, it'll be, you know, I really need to get pissed off and go pound the crap out of my bed or a heavy bag. Or, you know, one person I knew, I thought she was very cool. She went out and bought a big garbage can at a local store and filled it with big rocks in the bottom. And then she bought really cheap dishes at a yard sale for like 10 cents a piece. And whenever she got mad, she'd go out in the backyard and slam the dishes down into the trash can onto the rocks. And because there were rocks in a trash can, she didn't even have to clean up the mess afterwards. But in any event, what ended up happening is after 4 or 5 minutes of really fervently expressing at an inanimate object the anger or the sadness or whatever, what you may tend to notice is that the feeling starts to go away.
I also did notice that on Internet Explorer, this is streaming. On Firefox, it is not. So I don't know why, but... That's the fact. So that's
Jack.
That's the fact, Jack.
And that's the fact, Jack. Yeah. So if you're still out there and can switch browsers, that's pretty cool.
Awesome.
So I hope that answered Ray's question. I mean, it's one of these odd things, you know, is that where we tend to jam up is on that whole expression thing. I have a really great client. I quite like her, and she's been working on the anger issues for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And, you know, the first time that she came home and basically said to her husband and kids, you know, mom's really upset right now, so I'm going to go and pound the bed and yell and scream. The kids were like, well, mom, you're freaking right out, you know, and boy, are you nuts, and da-da-da-da-da. Now, I mean, it wasn't even that long. It was like a week. And they're like, oh, mom, you seem a little angry. Do you want to go in and pound the bed? And her husband has held up like a couch cushion for her to pound. Well, now what she's discovering is that since she's gotten most of that anger out of her system, all the kind of leftovers from years and years of sucking that stuff in and not dealing with it, that other emotions and other issues are starting to arise, which are much more interesting. You know, anger is kind of boring and one that we want to kind of process through quickly. But now she's starting to, you know, ask some real intelligent questions about who she is and, you know, where she's going with the rest of her life.
Yeah, you know what's really interesting is how the judgment over anger, or the judgment of your feelings, is kind of turned around. So anger was like a thing that probably people feel very negative about, right? It's like, oh, this is bad, I'm feeling anger. And then that client of yours was able to turn around, and everyone was encouraging her, hey, mom, go get angry because you seem to feel better once you're finished being angry. So it's almost turning it around from a very negative perspective to, oh, once mom's finished being angry by hitting the pillow or whatever, then she's going to be good old mom.
Mm-hmm.
So people are kind of encouraging it, and you don't get stuck on the feeling of judging that natural, you know, noticing the feeling without judgment, I think, is a key component.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's that whole the word that we like to say, or the phrase, is bare awareness, B-A-R-E awareness, that it's nothing but awareness, that I see the situation, I feel my feelings, I have my thoughts, and what I leave out of that equation as I notice that I'm starting to do it are all the judgments that go with it. So I can therefore have my feelings and express them and move past them, and it actually happens quite elegantly and quickly.
Yeah, I really like the idea of being with, you know, whatever you're feeling, and, you know, and it tends to, once you accept it, and I know we're not there yet, I guess that's where we're going, but it sort of takes it away, that feeling that if it's negative for you, the way you're interpreting it, the acceptance part of it helps you get through it more quickly.
Yep.
Yeah.
You invented a new word. That was pretty neat. I like quicklier.
Yeah, quicklier is a great word. And,
and,
you know, from my own personal experience tonight, accepting the way this is going with the technology, you know, Jeff, I apologize that you didn't have a pleasant experience with the phone and all that sort of stuff, but I just got to kind of deal with what it is and accept that that's what it is. And I'm not going to personalize it, you know,
mm-hmm.
because there's nothing I can do.
Yeah, and it may even be that Jeff didn't have a bad experience with it. He just had an experience.
Right. Jeff, thank you for the experience. Help me grow. I hope you're not
yeah.
in there.
Yeah. So, we can maybe look at that acceptance piece too. You know, that it's a tricky thing, as I said, that there's a tendency in our society, and I think we may have talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but that especially in the realm of feelings, that most of us have been conditioned to have a good and bad, right and wrong list around emotions, and certain emotions are expressible, and certain other ones aren't. In my book, This Endless Moment, I told the story of a friend of mine to talk about this from the positive side, and that's in quotes, positive. She was at a party, a convention kind of a thing, and a woman came up to her that was a friend of hers and just, you know, was kind of gushing, "Oh, my God, I just love you so much. It's so good to see you. This is just amazing. Oh, man, you're one of the most important people in my life." And the woman did this kind of at a table where there were 8 or 10 other people plus my friend. And the rest of the table just kind of like, you know, held their breath and were looking at her strangely, you know, like because – I don't know what it's like. I don't even remember what it's like down in the States around stuff like that. But in Canada, we're kind of a little reserved up here. So big emotional outbursts like that, not so much. So my friend was fine with it and went over and gave her a big hug and said how glad she was to see her too. But the woman immediately shut down and kind of slunk off to her table with her tail between her legs just because she felt like she had, well, or thought that she had committed a great faux pas. And so even with the positive stuff, there are societally imposed limitations. So what we're trying to do is say we have to move to the place of total acceptance of the experience that we're having inside without the good, bad, right, wrong judgment list so that I can just, in other words, have the experience. Or like Jan was describing, you know, that suddenly she's standing right next to her fear and she's no longer afraid.
Yep, that's awesome. We have we do have a question. I think this might even be Jeff. Hello?
Hello?
Is this Jeff?
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff.
I wasn't angry at all before.
I didn't, you know. That's
what's your problem?
You see the drama that I went into, right? I'm like, oh, wow. You know, and I personalize it, right? And I'm like, wow, Jeff thinks I'm a jerk. Because
no, not at all.
Yeah.
But
I have a related question.
Now I have a related question, though.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Sometimes if I've had a negative reaction, I've realized it's silly or superstitious old behavior, and I'm trying to shift the new behavior. There's some leftover crap that's sort of still in me, and it's not a situation where I can go pound on a punching bag or something. Are there particular – I mean, and just as you were hanging on to that concern that I was pissed off about something and I wasn't, I'm just curious about, you know, when in the moment, just various ways in the moment to escape the aftermath of the old behavior as I've noticed it, and just, you know, how to actually let it go, because sometimes there's some just baggage left from it in the moment, just as you may be feeling of frustration because the internet thing isn't working. And by the way, I did log on Internet Explorer, and that isn't even really working, but my phone may die soon.
Well, let me have a, you know, like, first of all, I thought it was absolutely great, you know, that you did call back and to kind of check in on how you're actually doing. And again, my point to John was how quickly, you know, and it was perfect for the discussion that we're having about how often we're taking our stuff and projecting it out onto the field, onto other people, onto the situation. So that was that A part is really good that we had that little illustration just to remind ourselves that we do that. But in answer to your question, I think if you've read some of my stuff, one of the places we reference all the time is a place, a human development training place out on Gabriel Island in British Columbia called The Haven. And they're really big on a lot of the kind of stuff that we talk about, too, and it's why Dara and I were briefly on the faculty out there and really liked the place. And as a matter of fact, after last time session, Dara was trying to make sure that I reminded people to breathe, and I've said that a couple of times today. So one of the things that we've discovered is that when people have an emotional reaction of any sort, and especially the ones that in brackets we'd put on the negative list, you know, anger or frustration or whatever, we tend to stop breathing, and which is kind of actually a little dumb because our brains are fed by oxygen, so we're depriving our brains of exactly what they need to do their thing. So one of the things that we practice, Dara and I practice, as we communicate with each other is coaching each other to breathe if we notice the other person is holding their breath. Happens a lot in small groups that we lead, and also happens at Haven. There'll be some big drama going on, and the leaders will look around the room, and everybody's holding their breath. So they'll just say, breathe. And everybody takes in one big breath and then starts laughing as kind of the tension breaks. So we're big proponents. And again, if you go onto my website, onto the bodywork section and read the index, you'll see a section on an actual breathwork technique that you can learn to do so that you know what a full breath feels like and how that goes. And then it's very easy to implement that pretty much anywhere. So
Go ahead. By the way, I'm probably going to hang up soon. It's not because I don't love you guys, but I think Windows Media Player is working now.
Oh, all right. You're making me happy.
I know. Well, there you go. Big smile. Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. See ya.
Appreciate all the contributions.
Bye-bye. So I'm going to actually finish the kind of the answer to that. You know, so the one thing is that at any point along the way, I can stop and breathe. That's just 100%. So even as clients or callers might be, you know, upsetting themselves over something, or people that I'm working with, one of the things I like to try to remember to do is invite them to have a breath.
Wayne, why didn't you remind me that, like, I don't know, 15 minutes ago? I couldn't use that.
John, have a breath. And then secondarily, there's appropriate times for everything. And I basically think, you know, in general, being greatly emotional, like at work, is kind of silly. But that doesn't mean I think we should be stuffing the stuff. I've always been impressed that Japanese companies, in a lot of respects in Japan, will even have anger or emotion rooms that you can book out, and you can go right at work and go into the room and pound something or yell and scream, and they're soundproofed and, you know, very bright idea. But if your place of business doesn't have that facility, I would say there's nothing wrong with, on your next break, slipping out to the car and smacking the steering wheel a couple of times, or just going out in the car and screaming. And if that isn't going to work for you, that by the time you get home, you do it then. So in other words, even though people say, well, yeah, but the edge is off and I don't really feel that, if that's the not noticing part, again, that's just the ego kicking back in to give you an excuse to not deal with the anger. So if you go home and say, you know, I really had this thing happen today, and boy, did I ever piss myself off, and I really need to deal with it, and you kind of just revisit the situation, pretty soon you're feeling it again, and you can deal with it at home.
I like that. You know, I think that corporate America, if there's any, like, you know, CEOs or upper management on this call, I love the idea of building a padded soundproof room where people can just go nuts. I had dinner with a big HR manager the other night for Qualcomm, okay, and they have like 30 HR people there at least, so it's not going to really turn her out. But anyway, she specializes with, you know, conflict resolution. There's something like, I forget, 5,000 employees at the office that she has. And could you imagine if they actually had a facility like that where people could just go and be frustrated and then be okay? You know, it would probably make her job a lot more pleasant because she's dealing with issues that are, you know, explosive. I don't know if you guys saw that movie. I think, what was it, The Office? With the guy with the stapler. Do you remember that movie?
No.
He kept getting sent down, you know, they moved him from a cubicle to, like, the corner. Then they ended up sticking him in the basement, and they ended up taking away his stapler, and, he went postal on everybody.
Okay.
Yeah. Fantastic scene. But,
Yeah. Well, it's like that, you know, that because, and again, the noticing piece is how quickly our ego structure wants to jump in and come up with a reason not to deal with the emotion. And I mean, I see this with clients all the time, you know, and I can see that they're just furious and they're ready to kind of to pop. And I start to challenge them on it, you know, and say, you know, you really need to, let's deal with that. Let's really get in there and do it. And then you can almost see like this tightening down in the body and especially around the jaw where they bite back down the words. And then they kind of give themselves a little bit of a wiggle all the time, not breathing. And you can almost see that emotion getting shoved right down into their stomach and into their chest, and then they say, oh, no, it's not important enough to deal with. And, of course, what happens is that stuff just builds up, and it's sort of why there's always those stories about, you know, somebody comes home from work and there's this huge fight over a dirty coffee cup left on the counter. And then you take a step back from, you know, why would anybody be fighting or arguing over a dirty coffee cup? Well, the answer is they're not. The dirty coffee cup was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right. Here's something more positive. Ray asks, if you notice you're happy, can you sustain it longer?
Well, you know, in Uncle Wayne's world, the goal is not to sustain anything. This is back to, you know, sort of the basic Buddhist tenet is that that life is suffering, and the reason that life is suffering is that we cling to our desires. And so what that means is nothing wrong with desires. There's nothing wrong with wanting stuff, liking stuff, finding pleasure in things. Absolutely. That's why we're in bodies, is to just fully and deeply experience everything. But what we tend to do is we grasp on to, so we have a really good experience and we just don't want it to end. You know, and you hear people newly in love going, I just don't want this relationship ever to change. And it's just also, and I'm like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. It's already changed. And what ends up happening is we go up into our heads and we start fantasizing about this rush of adrenaline that we got, and oh wow, do I ever feel good. So then we try to hold on to this thing that's fading or is already faded into nothingness. And the sadness about that, and I'm not to say that if I decide, gee, I want to remember, you know, this really great experience I had back in high school, I can give myself permission to do that and go sit down somewhere, set a timer for 10 minutes and really remember it and please myself. But at the end of the day, as I do that, and any time I go into my head, what I'm doing is I'm checking out of reality and moving into fantasy land. And I guess I really would rather just be present with what's going on. And what I notice is that moment by moment, I can be quite satisfied and quite content and quite happy as long as I'm willing to move along with what's going on.
Yeah, I've been spending, we've been doing a lot of work trying to stay present and not, like, you know, jumping on the cloud and going into the drama of Jeff being angry with me because he pressed 5-star and didn't get on immediately. You know what I mean? Okay. So one of the things that my wife and I got was this little water bell fountain. Okay. It's at a website like Gaiam or something. Okay. And what it does is it has 6 bells in the middle of it and 2 floaty bells. Okay. So as the water fountain, you know, the water spews up, these little floaty bells goes around and chime with the other bells that are fixed. So the reason we got it was not to go crazy and be annoyed by the bells, but was every time we heard a bell chime, then we were going to try to remember to be present, to kind of break the automatic thinking. And what's really interesting is that it works, but it annoys you because you're off doing your thing, but it works, and you're like, oh, wait, I'm annoyed. But wait, I'm supposed to be present. Okay. And then eventually you find things in your life that the chiming doesn't complement. So, for example, if you're listening to music and then you hear the chime and you're just like, oh, I got to shut the fountain off or shut the music off. Or if you're watching TV and you hear the chime, then, you know, it may not be appropriate for the chime. But, you know, generally I find this to be a pretty interesting tool to stay present, you know. It's sort of a little social experiment that my wife and I are doing, and she's finding it a lot more pleasant than me. But at least mm-hmm. It's forcing me to break my automatic habit of being in fantasy land of you know. So I don't know. It's just something that we were doing. It's an interesting experiment.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you know, just to play language police for a minute, you know, like the bells don't frustrate you. You know,
yeah.
You may choose to frustrate yourself over the bells, and it's not the same thing. And the other piece is, you know, that the judgment is that if a bell sounds at an inconvenient time, I may choose to frustrate myself over it. But, of course, the other half of that one is, and that's why I would like, if you were going to do that, I would never turn the bells off, is that the real lesson is how not to frustrate yourself when something happens out of what you expect. So we're back to, you know, anybody can get this stuff when nothing's going wrong. The real trick is to be able to pull this off when something's inconvenient, when something is not happening according to the plan or whatever. So I would say, you know, for you, the best exercise in the world would be to, you know, to put it next to your bed and leave it on for like 48 hours.
Yeah, that would do it. So what lesson is that you're going to tell me the magic secret, that how I'm going to be able to deal with the frustrations and not be frustrated, or deal with the events, the challenges, and not be frustrated?
Well, you know, like the answer to that is, you know, Darbella's magic lesson, breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So as you notice the frustration coming up, part of it is accepting, wow, I'm really frustrating myself right now that bell's going off. I think I'll have a really big breath and just sit right here with it and then bring my attention back to what else is going on, as opposed to, you know, that bell is really annoying the hell out of me. I better go shut it off.
Right. Yeah, because the bell's purpose, it's actually serving its purpose. It's taking me out of my drama, right? It's taking me out of my fantasy, whatever I'm engaged in. And I bet you if I was in flow of being totally present and doing my thing in the moment, I wouldn't the bell would just be part of what's happening, and it wouldn't be a distraction.
So yeah, it would just be the thing that is going on right now. And as I said, the essence of this whole exercise, and it goes back to a lot of the questions that were being asked, you know, that the goal here in all that we're talking about is not to help you perfect what's working for you already. I mean, a lot of people get into that. Well, I'm doing this right, and I'm doing this, and I'm like, well, that's very cool. What isn't working for you? Because that's where the rubber hits the road. You know, again, my line for all of this is any fool can communicate when there's no fighting, and anybody can, you know, have an elegant life when there's no problems. The question gets to be, what happens when something shifts? And it's not expected, and it could be considered a trauma, or it could be considered a conflict, or we get into the beginnings of an argument with somebody, and our tendency is then to want to go back into our normal method of communication, which may be no communication or fighting. Well, you know, how quickly can I notice what I'm doing, have a big breath around it, take a step back, and then say, no, wait a minute, that's not the way I'm doing this anymore. Here's what I'm doing. And then go back into the new learning, which always is going to, or at least initially, is going to be the option that we don't automatically choose. In other words, we're going to have to kind of make ourselves do it for a while just to see what the difference is if I stop running on autopilot.
I like it. Can you talk us through the exercise on page 5 of the action guide?
Mm-hmm. Just let me click a little button here, because.
Oh, you okay?
I'm on it. Yep, okay. There we go. I'm almost right with you. So this is actually one of my favorite exercises, and I shove this into all my books, and it's in This Endless Moment, and if memory serves me, some version of it is in Half Asleep in the Buddha Hall, which I think, by the way, I just got a honking supply of them today, and it looks pretty good, so we've just got a little bit more technical stuff to do on the website, and it ought to be out and available within the next, I would say, week at the worst, but we'll keep you posted on that one. And I call this little exercise, and I teach this to clients, the self-revelation exercise. And so the idea is that you go off to some place where people gather. So the two things I suggest are like a mall, or I even prefer the beach. And the idea is to watch people go by and notice what's going on for you as people go by. Now, if you can, the very best way to do this is with someone that you know and are in relationship with. So, you know, in my case, it might be sitting in the mall with Dar. And then what I want to do is tell her in a quiet voice the stories or the experiences I'm having with the people that I'm noticing. And so one of the ways we play this out in the sheets is a little bit more complex than this, but we'll say, let's just have a conversation about people that are going by that turn me on or turn Dar on. And so then we'll just describe, you know, oh, wow, you know, I really like her or vice versa, you know, and, or gee, I'm not so turned on by it. So that what's going on is being revealed in an open way. Here's what's going on in my head. And because we're open and honest, totally open and honest with each other, there's no secrets about that kind of stuff for us. I also suggest in this exercise that it's all of it, you know, that as you look at different people with different body types or different races or whether they've got kids with them or they don't, and that you listen to at the very least and preferably reveal to somebody, oh, geez, you know, what just popped up in my head is, and then you talk about it. So that instead of just having the experience internally and having an internal reaction to it, we're breaking the process and saying, you know, here's what's up for me.
Wow. I mean, it'll be really interesting to acknowledge all those judgments, you know, because basically every thought has an attached judgment, especially when you're doing that observation. It's so interesting to see how quickly we jump to, hey, look at this fat slob, you know, look at that hot girl or whatever. And, you know, it's an amazing judgment. You know, it brings me back to something similar that happened to us in our school, okay? This is kind of interesting. A bunch of parents, we found out that a teacher got fired for apparently you know, some sort of inappropriate touching with a student, okay? And we have a very good school, and you kind of expect that these sort of things don't happen in good schools, but, of course, they happen. They can happen anywhere. So all the parents were up in arms about this, and it was like a third-grade girl or something like that this apparently happened to. And the teacher got locked up or got taken away and this and that, and it was a big drama, right? And we were all standing around outside, you know, sharing how bad the principal was for letting this happen and how bad this teacher was and all the drama, all this, you know, semi-panic. And then someone said, I'm going to go ask a teacher why, because they knew about this apparently like a month ago before it all got released to the public, okay? So one of the parents said, I'm going to go ask this teacher why she didn't tell us, okay? And she was all very huffy about it. So she went to the teacher and came back. And she said, well, the teacher said that they don't believe the student, that the student set up the teacher. And then that, like, kind of blew us away because that was an outcome that we didn't anticipate. You know what I mean? We expected that guy was guilty, okay? We never even considered that the third-grade student might have set the teacher up. So that totally changed the perspective. Like, it's almost like, oh, look at that fat slob walking by you on the beach or whatever. You don't know that guy's diabetic or that guy has a endocrine gland problem, whatever the thing is, the thyroid problem or whatever, you know. So it really changes your perspective when you kind of let go of those beliefs and you kind of, like, find out what the real situation is.
Sure. There's a Zen story that goes, I'm not going to do the whole story because it's kind of long, but it's just basically talking about a farmer that all their horses run away, the mares, and then they come back leading a stallion. And ultimately the son and all the villagers come up and are congratulating him on his great, you know, he's got wealth now because all of his horses are back plus this huge stallion. And he says, perhaps. And then at another point, the son falls off the horse and breaks his arm, and the people all say, this is terrible, you know, that, you know, he's the guy that works your farm, you know, you're going to be destitute. And the farmer says, perhaps. And then a little later, the army comes and takes all the able-bodied men in the village away to be soldiers, and the only one left behind is the son with the broken broken arm, and they're all congratulating him, and he says, perhaps. And I guess that the point is that it does us no good, you know, to have all these really, you know, big opinions about what's going on, and we know all the answers and we know what's going on, as opposed to just watching things unfold, you know, and that's a good illustration of that. This is part of that process that we describe, and if you go into the study guide and go to page 9, you see an extension of the exercise I just talked about, where you just do the whole thing all over again and watch what comes up in your mind, you know, and much like you're saying, you know, looking at, you know, the girl in the miniskirt or the big guy or whatever, and having all these judgments. But where we want to get to is to be able to own the judgment as opposed to try to justify it. So rather than get in any big drama, it's, you know, saying to myself, wow, here I am judging again. Or here I am lusting after that woman, or here I am rejecting that person, and then it's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. It's got nothing to do with what I'm looking at. And then once we do that process and like basically stay with like whoever we're looking at, we'll see it start to arise again, and all the stories and all the reasons why that person's hot or that person's not. But what we really want to do is get it down to the point, as I said in this exercise, that we're just saying to ourselves, you know, judging, that's enough, or horny, or sad, or happy, or whatever, and get it down to like one word that just names the thing I'm doing. And that I recognize it's got nothing to do with the field. It's got nothing to do with what I'm looking at. It's got everything to do, and especially if I'm sitting there talking to my partner, and I may see someone and I find them, you know, somebody I wouldn't want to even know, and my partner's going, wow, what an interesting person. Well, then we absolutely know it's got absolutely nothing to do with the field, with the person that we're looking at. We're having two different, totally different reactions to exactly the same stimulus. And so that's not about the stimulus, that's about us.
That's really interesting. I love the idea of just sitting around and doing that one word expression. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun to do. And and I guess if we sit there and we say horny, okay, now should we, is it ordinarily, you know, my automatic person might say, wow, that's a bad feeling. You shouldn't be horny when looking at somebody else. You're a married guy. So right there, I'm coming back into like a judgment over my thought, right? And that's not what we're trying to accomplish in this exercise, I don't think, right?
Or with any part of our lives. I mean, all that does is gives us, you know, one more thing to beat up on ourselves about. And at the end of the day, I'm still having that feeling. So where we're trying to go is to say it really doesn't, and if you haven't noticed this by now, let me make this crystal clear to all of you. Beating up on yourself and telling yourself you're an idiot for having your feelings has never worked, and it never will. It just won't. So where we're going with it is to name and own the feeling, or name and own the experience that I'm creating for myself, have a breath and let it go. Then I can move on to whatever's coming up next.
All right. Well, this is going to be great. This is going to be a great, you know, there's just so many wonderful opportunities during the course of a day where you get to notice, have a breath, and let it go. I'm really looking forward to that. 5-star on your keypad on the phone line if you guys have questions. Now's a great time to ask. And we'd certainly want to hear next week how you guys do with this exercise yourself. And there's a lot of content on this action guide, and it's not meant to be read while you're listening to this call. So I hope you all take a chance to print it out and spend a little bit of time with it, and do the exercises and report to us next Wednesday. Here's a caller I'm going to unmute. Hi, can you hear us?
I just had to unmute myself. You there?
Yes.
Yeah, no, it worked very well. It said hand raised and then says, you know, you're on. So that's working.
Cool.
I have a question for you. It probably all boils down to jealousy. I don't know what it is, but I've had two relationships, each one lasting about a year, maybe a little bit less. And, you know, one non-sexual at all, but and the person's up front saying, I just want to be a friend, but I pursue it beyond that. you know, trying to win them over a period of time, you know, through generosity, through being kind, through all of that stuff. And then, you know, at some point, they'll be off dating somebody else or something, and then I get this jealousy factor that comes up, and so I say, okay, this isn't it, goodbye. And it's just kind of bothering me that that's happened a couple times now, and I don't know, I guess I don't know how to, you know, once the chemistry is there, for whatever reason, again, whether it's, you know, acting on it or not acting on it, but if it's there, backing off and just being a friend is extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Give me some of...
Sure. It's kind of interesting. I was just doing some counseling the other day with a guy that's just shy of 40 and is divorced and in a relationship that kind of tanked, I guess, 2 or 3 months ago. And then he was back to starting to think about dating the woman again. And so that's the point where I came in. And so I said to him, you know, well, what are you looking for specifically in the relationship? What do you want? And he looked at me like, well, you know. And I'm like, no, really, what do you want? And we played with that concept a little bit. And he ultimately said, well, how am I ever going to have what I want in a relationship if I don't know what I want in a relationship? And so what I ended up doing was pointing him to a book or the booklet part of this thing is called The List of 50, and it's available on my website for a free download. I since have expanded it into a book, and the basis of it is this idea of The List of 50, and basically something I discovered back when I was 30 and had just ended my second marriage, and so I decided I never wanted to do that again, and I'd rather get it right the third time, and now 26 years later, it's still working. What I decided was the same thing. I had one or two things in mind about the kind of person I wanted to be with, and the rest of it was, you know, very optional in terms of what the relationship was going to look like, whether we were going to use a communication model, how it was all going to fit together, that whole honesty piece that I talk about a lot. So what I ended up doing was actually spending a couple of weeks and writing down 50 characteristics of the person that I wanted to be in relationship with. Not because I think that suddenly that's going to magically create that person, but exactly what we're talking about tonight, so that I was clear about what it was I was looking for. And what tends to happen, I think, my description of this is that the norm that we end up with is there, if we're heterosexual, there's a male line and a female line, and everybody's walking forward. And when you get to the front of the line, you turn inward, and that's the person that you're going out with. And there's no – it's almost like a crapshoot. And because of the numbers of divorce rates in North America, we know pretty much that there's about a 90 or 95% of the relationship not working out. That's not to say necessarily separate or divorce, but at least that it might be that we just are bored with the person, but we stay with them out of habit. But successful relationships, somewhere between 5 and 10%. And my gut instinct about that is that most people go into relationships without an absolutely firm idea of exactly what it is they're looking for and the unwillingness to settle for anything less.
Yeah, my criteria was kind of simple. I think I probably only had about four of them. One was, you know, the chemistry. The second one being trust. The third one being able to communicate about different subjects at different levels. You know, and then the fourth one being, you know, enjoying. I'm very sports-minded, and having the other person be, you know, sports-minded, not from watching basketball, but from actively being involved in life, not necessarily even doing the same thing, but having that love of life, so you go out and you squeeze the most out of it every day.
Sure. And if you think about that list, and now let's just pretend that the cosmos really is like a vending machine, and you put that order out to the cosmos, what you're going to get is, you know, a really cool person that's the catcher of the team and wants to go out and yak over a pizza and be your best friend.
And that's kind of what I got.
Yep. Absolutely. We tend to always get exactly what we want. Or what we put out. That's a better way to put it. We often get exactly what we put out. We don't often get what we really need or want because we're unclear. We're not specific enough. We're not absolutely crystal clear, and we're not willing to stand the ground to get what we want.
I'll get you a sticker on my monitor that says, "We find what we expect to find." So I think that's
your book.
What's that?
I will get your book. It sounds great.
Sure. Check the free the one on the basically phoenixcenter.com, and then this is hard to say, but I'll try it. free_for_the_asking. But if you just fiddle around up in the menus, you'll see it says booklets, and then there's something about free ones. So download the list of 51 for free. Everybody can look at that one, and it'll at least give you a feeling for what this whole process is about. And then if you decide you want to actually buy the book, there's a link.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, John, what do you say?
Well, I think that, there's a lot of great information tonight. I really apologize to everybody for the technical issues. There'll be a good recording of this. I also want you to notice on the listen page there's a donate PayPal button. We'd appreciate any donation that you can give to keep making these things available for free. Wayne works very, very hard to make this happen. He puts a lot of thought behind his action guides, and if you find this to be valuable to you, we do appreciate any amount of money that you can donate to make this continue to happen. We're going to pick up again next week, next Wednesday, for session 3, Wayne. What are we going to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about the I part of this little nail exercise, and that's investigation and integration. So we're going to it's part of what we've been doing with the callers and my talking to you tonight, saying, okay, here's the norm, here's what usually goes on, but let's investigate other alternatives and different ways to approach this thing and then integrate it, make it a part of my action plan so that I'm actually doing what I say I'm going to do.
I look forward to it, and hopefully we won't have these technical glitches. I'm going to guarantee we're not going to have these technical glitches. Also, on the action guide, you'll see links to Wayne's website, his blog, which I urge you to bookmark and visit often. So thank you, everybody, for your patience tonight, for dialing in, and we hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Put on your calendar next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Thanks again.
Looking forward to it. Bye-bye, John.
Good night, Wayne.
Thank you for attending today's teleseminar brought to you by theselfhelpschool.com. If you're interested in learning more about Wayne C. Allen's books, blog, and other products and services, please visit www.phoenixcenter.com. That's www.phoenixcenter.com.